Today on the Fozcast, we are at the beautiful Manchester United Carrington training complex to talk to former Aston Villa, Burnley, England and current Manchester United goalkeeper Tom Heaton, where we spoke about all things Manchester United knocking on Sir Alex Ferguson's door as a 24-year-old to tell him that he wanted to leave. That didn't go down very well. Some of his crazy, unorthodox training methods, how brutal those Sean Dyche pre-seasons really were, and so much more. Up the Fozcast. Right, Tom, so I left this.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Place, what, 13-odd years ago? I've just walked in through the front door here at Carrington, and the first face I see is Kathy, sat down behind reception. 50 years that lady's been here. It's like it's a new Man United, but still, they've still got the same parts that make it is what it is, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think I had a similar experience coming back into the club. Certainly a good portion of the core staff still the same. You know, bring that sort of the values of the club, yeah, and sort of know the history of it and that connection to it. Obviously, it's grown since I left. But yeah, people like Kathy, or what this football club's all about.
It's nice. I like, it's like a full circle story for you, right? And we're going to talk about that. So I want to start at the beginning, right? I'm going to talk about when I signed for United, when I first met you.
First impressions of, this is, we've had a couple, Tom, where they've been young bucks together, and right, you two very, okay, much with that. Yeah. So I want to know what Tom and Ben's first impressions of each other were.
You go for me, because I was a raw goalie, so don't, yeah, hold back, all
no,
right?
No,
be
back.
Brutally
I,
honest,
I,
yeah?
I would say the outstanding thing in my mind, thinking back from when I first saw you, was you could wallop a football. And I mean, womp it up the pitch. I always remember the distance that left foot could sling it, and I thought, I'll have a bit of that, to be fair. So obviously, you know, seeing you take goal kicks, being on the end of your shots from the edge of the box, it was always interesting. But as a goalkeeper, I think, for me, you had a natural talent to keep the ball out of the net. Wasn't always orthodox.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
sometimes,
yeah,
a little bit unorthodox. Almost the opposite of me, really, to be honest. But I used to enjoy seeing you play. You play with the freedom, seemed to enjoy it. You didn't come through the conventional background, uh-huh, of sort of that I'd come through. So for me, it was almost a real eye-opener, seeing a different way to do it.
All right, then my turn now then, all right, yeah? So
my turn now.
A young Tom Heaton. So this would have been, what, 2003, 4-ish?
2005?
When did you sign?
Yeah, 2005.
When did you sign?
I think 2005, maybe, actually.
Yeah, I think you were 2005 to 2010,
yeah.
Yeah, same. Right. It's very, very similar time frames.
Yeah, very similar time. So Tom Heaton, come up through the academy here at Man United, thrown straight in with a first team goalkeeper. So at the time it was Van der Sar, Tim Howard for a little bit, Thomas Kuschak, Luke Steele.
Yeah.
And then there was Tom Heaton. And I just remember Tony Coaten, the goalie coach, I remember just watching this guy in training, right, and thinking, oh my God, the technique on it. Honestly, I still say now, to this day, the best goalkeeping technique I have ever seen on a goalkeeper was you. You were so, like, honestly, your shape was so perfect. You moved in unison, like your legs moved with your hands and your head, and everything was just so pretty, right? And I remember, like I say, I was so raw at the time, and I remember just thinking, I can't do that. I just can't do that. And TC used to just go, don't worry though, he's been doing it for years. Yeah, don't worry though, he's been doing it for years. But you had a really nice grounding at United, didn't you? Who were some of the big goalies, some of the big people that you learned from growing up?
Well, obviously, I have some fantastic coaches, TC, Richard Hartis, Dave Rouse, Dave Ryan, Vinnie Campbell, gave me a real good foundation of goalkeeping. Obviously, Craig Mawson now as well, yeah. Rich Hartis is still here. So they gave me a real good foundation of the sort of basics of goalkeeping, which I seem to take, you know, I took on Unreal sort of tried to use it as the foundation of a game, really. I think growing up watching Schmeichel, you see how he plays with his presence and sort of aggressiveness. You sort of try and add a little bit of that in your game. For me, I spent obviously in the time that you were there quite a lot of time with Edwin over the years, got quite close to him, loved how he played and spread composure through the team. Different to Schmeichel, but had the same sort of effect on the side.
Oh,
calmness and always in control, but had a real big impact on all the way through the team. So they were big influences on me, to be fair, and everyone in between, you know, players you sort of take bits off. As I said about you, the freedom with what you played with, finding a way to keep the ball out of the net. That was something that I didn't particularly have, but I wanted to add in as a young goalkeeper. So I can probably look at almost every goalkeeper and take something from them, really.
Joe, I think Edwin, for me, I don't remember, I learned so much about him as a footballer. I think I learned more about being just a bloke. Do you know what I mean? Being a man. Do you remember, Edwin, the way he used to just glide into training every day, just sort of, honest, the nicest man. Dead, respectful, personable, could talk to anybody. Just made you feel like he's got this, didn't he?
That feeling, and it's often a feeling with goalkeeping, I think, that actually spreads and people, it's that sort of untangible, intangible thing that makes a team settled.
Yeah,
really.
He
had that in abundance. So, you know, he used to calmly, his process was always the same, the preparation for games, talking to the players, demanding what he wants. You know, the relationship he had with the defenders about blocking off certain parts of the goal, there was always a calmness about what he did, and it showed. You know, it was a real successful period.
He did, even in training, right? There's days when he knew he didn't need to train. Yeah, he knew his body, he knew his schedule, his timetable, he knew when he's going to peak for that game on a Saturday afternoon. He knew what to do, didn't he?
So he did.
I remember sometimes he would come out, he would catch, Steely's the goalie coach. He would catch three or four balls, maybe not even catch them, pat them down. He was the king of patting it down, right? And then Saturday afternoon, oh my gosh, Rolls Royce, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really was. You know, he had that understanding of what he was about, understanding what he needed to perform when it mattered. And I think that was right. Eric Steele, obviously, I had a little bit of time with him here as well.
Yeah.
Forgot him off my list, to be fair. Sorry, Steely. But he was another one that I had at England under 18s as a coach. You know, looking back, you sort of try and take all your influences off different coaches, different people. It's interesting.
When you say about him being relaxed, though, you're not the kind of person that just gets on at United about just being on that level. So I'm sure he was very demanding in his own way as well, right?
Oh. Yeah, without doubt. You know, there was a meticulous sort of ideas and the way he went about it to his work and a pride. I remember talking to him, we were playing a kicking game across the box, and you know, we were talking about the left foot, and some of the lads, younger boys, were struggling with the left foot, and he was obviously right footed, but his left foot was an absolute dream, and they were trying to change the rules, and he was having none of it because he'd taken the pride in the fact of how much time he'd spent to get his left foot up to the standard it was, and he was adamant that we continued the game based on the left foot because he'd done
it's the only way you'll learn.
You know what I mean? Exactly. Yeah, meticulous about his work.
It's the only way you'll learn. That's what he was. He was the guy. I've got a story I remember, right?
Oh, no,
I remember. No, it's not a bad one. It's not a bad one, right? So,
Involve Manchester City Centre? Or?
No, nothing like that whatsoever. I promise you that. It's football related. Don't worry about that. So I remember, right? I was injured. So I came back from Watford, right? When I signed, I went out on loan for 2 years to Watford.
Yeah.
Came back. Unfortunately, I did my cruciate towards the end of the second spell at Watford.
The first time you'd done it?
Second time. Okay. So it was a bit of a long layoff. It was about an 8 or 9 monther.
Yeah.
Anyway, when I was getting back to full fitness, it was the goalies at the time were Van der Sar and was Thomas Kuschek.
Yeah.
And then it was you, basically. And so I was injured. You were kind of third choice goalie. You'd have been travelling around here and there with the squad. Your sort of first taste of being around the first team.
Yeah.
I was about a week away from full fitness. I'd started training again, but I was so raw still. I'd had a year before in the Premier League, done really well. But when you have 9 months out, it takes a long time to get back, doesn't it? It takes so long to get your bearings back. You even just get your hands back and that. So anyway, on the game on the Saturday for Man United, I think Van der Sar got an injury.
Yeah.
And then I think it was the one where Thomas Kuschek went and got sent off or something. I think it was the one where Shazy might have gone in goal or something, Rio went in goal or something like that. Anyway, the following week was a game against Derby. Edwin was injured.
Yeah.
Kuschek was suspended,
yeah,
and then I had basically had a week's training or whatever, and then there was you. And so it was kind of, who's going to play? Who's going to play?
Okay.
And I remember thinking, well, surely they're going to play me. Like, surely, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm a senior goalie, like, do you know what I mean? They're not going to play Tom, even though he's like a year or two below me. No chance, he's not going to play Tom. And I remember walking out on the training pitch with you, and we were just chatting about it, and you were like, yeah, I think I'm going to be playing. And I remember thinking, no. So I went, no chance. No. I remember saying, I remember going, no chance. Yeah. I'll be playing, surely. And you went, why would they play you? You haven't even been trained. And I was like, yeah, but I'm the senior goal. Surely I'm going to play.
No, like, admittedly, I don't remember this scenario, but I'd like, the belief issue probably doesn't surprise me.
I loved it, though. Yeah, honestly, no. I loved it. And I remember thinking, you haven't really played any sort of first team football, but you're like, no, mate. But you know what I really enjoyed was the fact that I know that if you would have played, you would have been absolutely golden, because I was still in awe of your absolute pure technique. Like, hands-wise, they're probably the best hands I've ever seen, mate. But I remember thinking, no, what is he talking about?
Here's a question for you then. At a club like, you've got to be a certain mentality, obviously, to be, and then at United, it kind of kicks on another level as well. So when you're a goalkeeper, senior, young, and you see there's maybe three, four senior goalies at the club, young kids as well, when you see another goalkeeper come in, do you automatically think, oh, shit, that's kind of another person for me to contend with? Or do you just have this level of mentality of, no, I do what I do? Or is it a thing where you kind of worry about it and have these kind of conversations?
Certainly no worry. I think from my personal point of view, always see it as a challenge. Belief never ever wavers. Whether other people can always see it is another question mark. At the end of the day, managers make the decision on team selection. But I have to say, you know, ever since I was a kid, for me personally, I've always had a belief in that I can deliver performances whenever required if I go through the process and prepare properly. So always see, you know, new goalkeepers coming in to wherever I've been as a good challenge to compete, but always literally focused on myself, to be honest. At the end of the day, it's the manager to make the decision, and that's the way I've always seen it.
Yeah. What about you, Ben? Is it something when in dressing rooms where someone's come in, have you thought, do you go home and have these conversations at home and go, I think I might be in trouble here? Or
yeah, I think as you get older, when you're kind of playing, when you're a first team goalkeeper, I think that's the bit that can be a little bit worrying, because you know what it's like nowadays. It's the rumour mill. The transfer rumour mill is horrible, isn't it? So when you're a first choice goalie and a club gets linked with another goalie, even if they're coming in as a second choice, you see it and you think, oh, and then you might get a mate he's only joking. He'll go, oh, so you got a bit of competition. But you just think, you prick. You do. You just don't need it. You're like, no, I'm first choice. All right. You should be respecting it. But yeah, I'm the same as Tom, though. I will see it as competition. I will. And like I said, I've built my career probably. I spent the whole of my career, and every single day in training is pathetic, yeah? But I will try and make sure I have the best hands, or I am the best training goalkeeper. And that is what just pushes me to work.
Yeah, that's exactly the point for me. I think for me, you never fear it, because if someone comes in and they're offering something different to you, then that's on you. There's holes in your game that aren't up to the standard. You know, there's no other way to say it. You know, for me, I've always sort of drummed into me from my dad early doors that, you know, it's your responsibility to get your game up to where it needs to be. If you're not up to standard, then someone else will be. Yeah. So that's on yourself to sort out, to either improve, develop, find a different way of doing things, whatever it is. But you need to be. And then over a period of time, if you keep performing and keep delivering, then you can't be ignored.
It's like you were saying about Edwin, though, even that little story. I like that story about using your left foot and the goalkeepers. And it's like, if you're not willing to do it, then someone will be,
someone
won't
will
they?
Be, yeah, exactly.
And what's it like going so full circle at United? Obviously, when you left United, how was that for you? Because obviously you're leaving the great Man United.
Yeah.
But was it a case of, I just want to go and play football?
Yeah, it was. You know, I signed here as an 11-year-old. Had a brilliant experience all the way through. You know, got up to 24, in and amongst the first team. I think a big moment for me was the 2008 Champions League final. You know, I was in the sort of 24-man squad that travelled, sat in the stand with five other players. You know, you do all the preparation to it. You know, you're on the pitch warming up, then getting showered, changed, sat in the stand, see the celebration, see how they go about it. And I remember that night thinking, yeah, this is great. It's the pinnacle of football, but want to be on there playing, want to be involved in it. And I knew from that moment that it was the right time to leave, to go and forge my own career, forge my own path. I wanted to be on there, wanted to be the number one. Even though it was a difficult moment, you know, that 13 years, been part of it, it never wavered from being the right decision, really. So, that was the big moment for leaving. I would say.
So some of the teams that you played for, so after leaving United, Rochdale, Swindon, Wickham, is it very much for you at that point, just, I just need to play first team football, I need to get as many back games under my belt as possible?
Yeah, it was. I mean, they were all loan spells from here. They were all sort of almost geared towards, you know, we saw that as building the foundations for your game. There's no substitute for practical experience. Those loan moves, getting the games under your belt are imperative, really. They're vital to do it. And I think they were great. But at that moment of leaving, when I was 24 and under the Bosman ruling, leave on a free, I just knew it was right. I wanted to go and earn my own journey, earn my own path, and left and signed at Cardiff, where I had a loan spell already.
And how was the manager with you? Because obviously you played under Sir Alex Ferguson. And was he, obviously with the David Beckham documentary coming out recently, you see how he was with players. How was your experience with him?
Brilliant all the way through. The moment I'd went to tell him that I wasn't signing the new contract and I was leaving out the door, he wasn't happy. Let's say that.
Really?
He gave me... I mean, you can imagine, you know, the club had put so much resource into me coming all the way through and so much time. And, you know, I've been involved in England 21s. I knew it was the right time for me. So, he was not happy at the time when I first knocked on his door. But I always say the fact that 2 weeks later he had me back in the office when I sort of stood strong with the decision. Always said he's always there for me, respects the decision. If I need anything, contact him. And that was massive for me. I mean, growing up through the club, that was a big moment, and it's rung true. You know, I've seen him so many times since, speak to him obviously regularly now when we see him. And that was a big moment for me to think, definitely the right decision.
So don't lie then, how scared are you at 24 years old?
I
know what it's like at this football club. So Alex Ferguson's the boy, he's the man, isn't he? He's the guy that you kind of, I remember right back in that, I used to be so scared of him. Yeah. How was it when you know you're going to knock on his door and go,
yeah.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You know, like it was really, really difficult, really uncomfortable, as I'm sweating, you know, you're sort of thinking, oh, is this the right scene? But I have to say, I didn't actually waver from knowing it was the right decision. So at no point did I question, am I doing the right thing here? That never seemed to waver. I'm not sure why. Even though the dealing with it wasn't comfortable, anything but I think it just felt it was right. It was the right time to do it.
Yeah, that's quite similar to me, to be fair. I was the same player. Thankfully for me, I didn't have to knock on his door. He called me in.
Cheers.
Yeah, unlucky, mate. You're going to go, all right? And I went, yep. Okay,
going home, back to Birmingham.
But it's right, though. You get to a point where you're like, no, this is it now. I've got to go and, like I say, forge my own way now. Cardiff, talk about Cardiff. Fantastic for you. Culminating in League Cup final 2012.
Yeah.
Against Liverpool, unfortunately, on penalties.
I know, frustrating. I mean, a brilliant, brilliant football club. I had a great loan spell there. Really enjoyed first year played. Was a little bit hit and miss, sort of finding my feet as the sort of trying to establish self as the number one, was in and out a little bit. Second season, new manager, Malcolm Mackay, came in, brought David Marshall in. Marshall played as the number one in the league. Thankfully, we had a League Cup run that was great. Stayed in that team and he kept me all the way in. And the big thing was, you often find that teams change the League Cup team, you know, through the rounds
as they get later
the final,
on.
Then he, you know, he plays his so-called strongest team, and then for me, thankfully, he kept me in, which was big for me. You know, imagine going all the way through and you're playing your number two keeper, keeping me in the team. So that Wembley final was massive. I really enjoyed it. I think the semi-final to that year, we beat Palace on pens, but in the first leg, I'd come for a cross, missed it, 1-0 down. That was a blow. But then played the second leg, played quite well, saved the two pens. Felt like I'd sort of almost made up for, you know, it's like you made up for the first leg, and then going into the final, we were really unlucky. You know, Liverpool missed the first two penalties.
Stevie G missed, didn't he, at first?
Saved Stevie G's first one. Big moment, to be honest. I think Charlie Adam ballooned the second one over the bar.
Yeah.
But yeah, we didn't win it after them.
Have you seen, I can't remember what advert it is, it's like a Sky advert or something. It's you, isn't it? Where it's like Stevie G's taking runs up, take the penalty, and it's you doing like acrobats. and you kick it away and stuff. Have you seen this?
I don't think that's me.
I swear on my life. It's from the 2012 Carling Cup final.
Probably will be.
And it's like, it's obviously been like manipulated and stuff like that, yeah? Right. But he runs it, takes a penalty. And it's you who does like an overhead kick, like, and you volley it away sort of thing at the same time. I swear this ain't just me. Have you seen this? I'll show it in a bit.
Well, that's a nice little, we need to talk about this then, because this isn't, you've had, it's not shade thrown at you. It was affection and love from Joe Hart and Nick Pope when we were they were talking about, because you said, didn't you, Ben, you feel like that goalkeeping trio is like the holy grail of goalkeeping squads, don't you?
It's up there. There's one that I can throw in there that might be challenging.
Go on.
It was the Kasper Schmeichel, Joe Hart, and who was the other one?
City.
Shay Given.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Kasper Schmeichel, trio, Joe Hart, and Shay
Given.
Good luck
keeping them three happy.
That is a tough trio, isn't it?
No, it's a good... It's
very, very good.
They were talking about training and what a great trainer you are. But I think it was Joe that said... he said some of your training methods were quite unorthodox.
No, that's fair.
There were finger weights mentioned and there was imaginary diving when the ball was at the other end of the pitch. You've got to defend or...
I would like to tell you they were lying, but there is something in it.
Explain. I need this explaining.
A couple of things. Firstly, the finger weights, I think...
marginal gains, right?
Exactly. You know, don't leave any stone unturned. I think, you know, for me... ball catching on your finger, you need the strength in your finger. So the heart, he came in one day and I'm like, you know what I mean, just giving it the old dumbbell on the fingers there. And he was like, what is going on here? And I just said to him, mate, listen, like, no stone unturned. And I think the out on the pitch, for me, goalkeeping is a big mental thing.
Yeah,
a lot of it's about feel. You can go through the warm-up for a goalkeeper is going through the motions. I think for me, the warm-up is the mental side of the game. It's a reactive position. It's a difficult position. And that's why you've got to have your head right. That's the biggest thing in goalkeeping. I don't know if you'll agree.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So for me, I we'd do all the training, but there'd be a few things that I'd want to get through in my mind. So like, there's two imaginary ball scenarios. One is... I'm imagining a shot from the edge of the box, top corner. I'm just diving after it. You know what I mean? I'm making the save.
Where do you do this? Where?
So like, I'd do it on a Friday. So, but then the manager would be going through shape. He'd be talking at the top end of the pitch. So all the lads would be half keeping an eye, and they'd see me at the bottom end, just diving into the top corner.
Just go taking off.
Just see all the shoulders going in the whole team and that catching eye.
Brilliant. I genuinely thought you were going to dispel it.
Yeah, there is. And the other one is I'd roll up a stationary ball out, and I'd be thinking there'd be a man coming through one on one. I'd come out and throw the star shape sliding along the floor just to the still ball on the floor.
That must be quite hard.
Yeah, it's not easy, but that's the idea. You know, it's almost like imagining he's making contact with it. And like you're having it. And it was just literally for my own head. I keep it more under wraps here, if I'm totally honest, than I did there. But like, I go through plenty of different stuff.
Do you know what? I'm with you a little bit. I don't get me wrong, I ain't doing it. No. But I understand it to a point, because I think it's almost like, you know, when you're playing golf, you have your practice golf swing.
Yeah.
It's kind of just a little bit like doing that. Like, even the 1v1s, like if somebody's coming through and you're like spreading, yeah?
Yeah.
You would not believe that there's an actual proper technique to doing this, yeah? People think that you just sort of spread and put your hands out and hope for the best. No chance in this. So one of the biggest things, like most natural human like response, is to just look away or close your eyes, yeah?
That's right.
If you can actually keep your eyes open and look
chin
at
on
it,
chest, bang.
Genuinely, and then you might have just enough time to react and like do something like that. Alisson does it now better than anybody I've ever seen, I promise you. Yeah. Alisson in the Premier, he slides out and he does this half kind of slide out spread kind of,
he does.
But he's in control of it.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing about it is he keeps his eyes open.
Yeah,
and honestly, people don't appreciate it.
Maybe you should speak to Olivier Giroud. Did you see that last weekend?
Oh, it was horrible, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely shit himself. Not in the face.
Kept the ball out there, didn't he?
He did keep the ball out. That's the main thing.
He did keep the ball out.
But no, there is definitely a technique to it. You know, like the detail of, is it on his left foot or his right foot, which led you leading with, you know, chin on chest. You say you get that little bit of reaction. Alisson does it very well, actually. You know, he almost opens up the goal and then fills that space with a slide while still being sort of fluid with his movement.
Is that something you would do then? So if you're watching a match of the day, or if you're watching the highlights on a Saturday or Sunday, whatever it is, are you watching every goalkeeping or every bit of goal that goes in and you think, could do that?
Not to that degree. Yeah. I did a fair bit of that growing up, but I think as you sort of find your own rhythm, I try and add little bits in when I see it, but I'm not in that much detail, I have to say. I tend to be a bit more... You know, I know really now what works for me and what sort of I find. So, yes, if something like you know, goalkeepers coming in, you try and take things off them that they might do slightly differently and add it in, but not looking at everyone else on the TV.
How would you describe your goalkeeping style?
Style?
Yeah. Or you as a goalie. What are you as a goalie? Do you know what I mean? If you had to ask to somebody who's played football for a long time, said, describe Tom Eaton as a goalie, what do you think they would say?
Well, I would hope they would say. I hope they would say consistent.
Yeah.
Consistently delivers good performances and every so often can do something that can win you a game. And if I'm honest, that has been the sort of principle of goalkeeping that I've tried to strive towards throughout my whole career, is that is how I see goalkeeping.
Yeah.
Do what you should do. Do it well. Every so often produce something that might win you the game.
Just reliable. Nice and reliable, isn't it, mate? Yeah. It's amazing how people overlook reliability.
Isn't it funny how, like with goalkeepers, it's almost like you, week to week, I think this kind of echoes your point, don't want to talk about them. If you're not talking about them, they're doing it right.
Doing it right.
And then occasionally when you are talking about them, it's that last minute save or the clearance or whatever it might be. You
know? And I think it spreads through the team that. If you've got reliability and consistently, and you know, people talk about success, and then the one above success is sustained success. So if you want to do that, you need consistency and you need reliability. And that's for me how I've always seen it. I think people can overlook it, actually.
Yeah,
for me, that's been a real driver for deliver high performances consistently.
I'm sure you'll know him, Professor Steve Peters. Oh, was he in England?
Yeah,
I
did a bit of work with Steve.
Yeah, of course you would have done, is that something you've done a lot of over your career? But it's first impressions, I would say, that you've probably bought into that significantly.
Fair.
Yeah.
Did a bit of NLP with Keith Mincher early doors. Yeah,
good old Mincher. Shout out Mincher, early on.
I had a similar sort of journey of sort of performance psychology, especially in goalkeeping, loved it, had a real impact on me. I think when I first went on loan, I think those learning curves I found that I thought, especially early on in my career, sort of, you know, late teens, early 20s, I think what I felt was my potential capability and actual output was probably, there was a gap.
Massive difference.
And it wasn't technical ability, it wasn't tactical, it wasn't really physical. It could only put it down psychological. So it's finding that practicality of how to deliver a performance and consistently deliver a performance. So that's why I went down that route. Really like it still to this day. I'm really big on it. For me, it's the biggest part of goalkeeping.
It's without doubt the biggest part of goalkeeping. You could have the best goalie in the world and you could have a goalie that's, you know, 60% of that best goalie in the world. But if that best goalie in the world is low on confidence, there's no point in even putting him in the team. Yeah. Genuinely.
It's very interesting. I remember Richard Lee, I think I've said this before, but when Richard Lee said it when he was at Watford with you, he could not believe. And it's just different people mentally process, do different things that Ben would... 5 minutes before the game, he's having a cup of tea.
Yeah.
You know, just in the chairs with a cup of tea and a biscuit. And he's like, that's how he does things. But I think that's something that, not necessarily just for football, but if you can get that grounding of understanding, whether it's NLP or working with someone, it as you get older, it's not something you've got to actively do day to day, but it teaches you just to probably deal with different situations, doesn't it? And just mentally be resilient.
And I think you sort of alluded to it there. I think a lot of it is self-awareness and understanding yourself and how you work and how to maximise what you bring, how to work with yourself. Popey, prime example. I used to look at Popey across the dressing room and have one glove face down on the floor, one glove would be on the top of his locker, and I'm thinking, how can you... And would there be a game going?
You're a mess.
Be
a game next you're day. I'm a thinking, mess.
You're not wearing them in the game tomorrow. I wear these. You know what I mean? I'm thinking, I just couldn't do it. But like, look how consistent his performances have been over the period of time. You know, everyone's different. You've just got to work with how you work, how you want it to go, and what... Have that self-awareness to know what's right for you. And I think... for me, I think it started with understanding myself, how I work, how I want to work, what I want to get to, and how to deliver that.
I think overthinking is one of the biggest problems for goalkeepers, probably footballers, probably people in general, to be perfectly honest with you, is overthinking stuff. So when you're worrying about stuff that hasn't even happened yet, that for me is something that I've learned as I've got older to just go, don't even give it a second thought. Do you know what I mean? But then once you're doing it, just try and actually enjoy what you're doing. Do you know what I mean? Too many people, I see it now in football, there's so much stress written over everybody's face, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's like they're going to die at the end of this football match or during this football match. And it's not the way to live. It's not, honestly. If you can, like I say, if you're out on the training pitch, you don't have stress written on your face, do you?
No,
you're having a nice time.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you've just said there is something that I changed quite early on. That the word you use, worry.
Yeah.
I think, like, for me, that is not... You do not want to be playing football
with
any
worrying.
Worry. And you do not want to be playing in goal with any worry. So where do you go with that? I think, you know, how I look at it is, you're playing goal, you've got to accept something at some point is going to go wrong. You know, like, so, you know, you can, it's not a negative outlook. It's the fact of, okay, at some point, you're probably going to do something that's going to cost the goal, might cost the result. Right, that's there. Fine. If it happens, can you deal with it? Yes, I can deal with it. Right, great. What do you want to do? Well, I want to go and embrace the game. I want to go and take it on. I want to have that sort of fearless mentality of, I'm going to have this.
Yeah.
I'm going to embrace this today. I'm going to take it on. And I changed that early on, I think, in my, and that has been the biggest turning point. You're reframing the energy, that nervous, worry, fear.
Yeah.
Excitement.
It's flight or fight, isn't it?
Yeah, and you can change it. You can change it in your body. You're changing it to, you know, enjoyment, taking it on, embracing it, excitement. It's how you frame it in your own mind and in your body for delivering it. And you can go either way with it. That's been a big one.
Is that what you think you did then? From Cardiff onwards? Because, like I say, playing first team football probably came a bit late for you, didn't it, really?
Did.
25.
Yeah.
Cardiff did really well. And then Burnley after that, obviously. Yeah. 200 appearances for Burnley. Would you say Burnley was probably where you had the best of your footballing career?
Up to this point, I would say so.
I like it.
I did change it. The loan spells helped with that. It also coincided with a bit of a psychological change. So, like, and I started to be able to perform. Big marker with the League Cup final in 2012 for me. What was it, 25, I think. Big marker for me for doing that because it was a final at Wembley, playing against a Premier League team. You know, I played well, felt fully in control of what I was doing. So that sort of went to Bristol City after that. Signed at Burnley, and that was a real marker of the first season. I think we were third favourites to get relegated. Ended up getting promoted back to the Premier League. That's when I left United. I wanted to get back to the Premier League and be a Premier League number one opportunity, and it built from there, really.
What's it like having a manager like Daichi, who I know for a fact, well, I have never been in one of his team talks, but I can pretty much guarantee you what he would say was to you personally would be, right, Biggin, you stop the ball going in the back of the net, and when you get it, you kick it as far away from far away as you possibly can.
You know what? Like, Burnley got tarred with that brush a little bit, and I understand why. You know, we were pragmatic, I think. Probably more pragmatic and functional going forward, but, like, we also played a lot of football.
Yeah.
You know, like, we got tarred with the brush, and it probably wasn't always fair. There wasn't a lot of risk, and that was more how we set up as a team, but we actually, you know, we win second balls.
Yeah, once you got it up there.
Then we'd start playing. So, like, you know, there has to be a bit of balance to it, but yeah, that, you know, the Gaffer's team talks were, you know, everyone knew what we were about. The whole team were on the same page. And I think one of the big things I used to enjoy about it, and he used to allude to the fact that the 11 lads, the whole squad really, stood down the tunnel, and we used to think, look at each other and go, we're ready here. And we used to look across, go, you lads better be ready because we're having it. You know what I mean? And people don't like it. You know, they're up and in your face. There's so much to be said for that physicality, application.
Absolutely.
And we sort of snowballed it, and everyone was on the same page, all pulling the same direction. We knew each other. We could deliver honest information and feedback to each other, and we'd get the best out of it. And it was just a brilliant time. We overachieved for...
It was that doggedness, mate. It was. Yeah. I remember exactly that, being in the tunnel. And I would look back at my team. I'd see him doing it. I'd look him back, and you could hear them all just like, angry, like caged animals, good to go.
I think Sean, from my understanding, he came on the podcast, Sean did, and it's a culture, isn't it? And he was saying, like, about how he used to have the wheel... and have a bit of fun there, didn't he? Spinning the wheel with
the fines and all that kind of stuff. And the forfeits.
And I guess it's the culture that he sets about that honesty and togetherness.
Yeah, and that's it. And I think the wheel was one of the things. I think his pre-season day, I'm assuming, I did see that episode, but I can't remember. Did he talk about the gaffer's day that he did in pre-season?
No.
Talk about that?
No.
So he did a gaffer's day where he was balls out the window, 2 hours. You don't know what's coming, but you're running. And you're running as a team, and it'll be carrying tyres, it'll be going in groups, you know, and it'd be 2 hours, give or take, you know what I mean, maybe an hour and a half, and then the last one would be a run round the pitch, and you have to get in a certain time. So if the last man or the slowest man don't get in, you're all back on the start line. And in the end, it's funny, you know, you do it once, someone don't make it, you do it again, and in the end, all the lads are running with the one lad that can't make it to get them through. And it's like bonds through adversity, you know what, it's that way, and that's... So much to be said for that anchor moment that carries you through the season. And so we literally had authentically that we knew each other were giving everything we had through that dressing room.
We love Sean Dyche.
Yeah,
we absolutely love Sean Dyche.
Yeah, absolutely.
So at Burnley then, You've got competition at Burnley, though, because at one point, like I said, what we mentioned earlier, you've got Joe Hart, you've got Nick Pope, and you've got yourself. That is a heavy trio of goalkeeping, isn't it?
It is. I think, you know, at that time, we had Adam Legstins and Anders Lindegaard as well. Yes. You know, there was a quintuplet, or whatever you want to call it. I don't know the word.
It
but
sounds
yeah,
about
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so something like
was
that.
Was Adam Lindegaard there?
Anders Lindegaard came in. So at one moment, we had five sort of senior goalkeepers.
There were a couple injuries flying around. Remember, Popey did that one where he came out, landed his shoulder kind of all over the shop.
Yeah.
Harty sort of had a bit of a dip. Well, it wasn't even Harty really having too much of a dip in form. Burnley were just sort of losing week in, week out. We spoke to Harty about this and he said, Dyche, you just had to pull me one day and go, listen, mate, I'm going to have to change something. Yeah. I'm going to have to change it. It's as simple as that. And that's where you came in and the fortunes picked up a little bit.
Yeah, and that's right. I think I'd been out the previous season with an injury and then it'd been my shoulder as well, I think, before Popey had done his. So I'd had the shoulder injury and Popey come in, done really well. And Popey got his shoulder in pre-season. You know, signing Harty, me and Harty go back a long time. Obviously, he was at City, I was at United as kids. We used to play each other against each other all the time. You know, not too dissimilar England age group. So we'd had a good relationship for a long period. And he rang me one day to tell me he was signing at Burnley. Massively appreciated him, stepping out and having the conversation. Yeah. You know, obviously, a lot of respect there. So he came in, started the season. And it was tough for me because I was captain of the club. On the back of my shoulder injury, wanted to get in the team, but at the same time, like I'd always been, everywhere I've been, and I think everyone should be in goalkeeping. There's a respect, there's a support. We all want to play, but you've got to support lad players.
And open and honest as well.
Yeah,
just be open and honest. If you're a goalie coach, a manager, whatever, just be open and honest with me.
Be straightforward. And he played really well. It was a real difficult period. I think we had 11 points after 19 games, and I think that's when he changed it over, literally halfway through the Premier League season. But if you're asking me, I think at that moment in time, he was probably playing this season halfway through, and that can be football sometimes.
Bonkers. I want to carry on talking about this in a minute. I've got a mad one to throw at you quickly. do you remember a young lad United when we were both together? We had a kid below us, like maybe two or three places down from us. Ron Robert Zieler.
I remember Ron Robert.
Robert Zieler, right? Yeah. So quick story for you all. So I remember being at United with Ron. Lovely lad. German lad.
Yeah.
Lovely lad though. Really good lad. You could see at the time he wasn't ready for playing football really. You could tell that it was never really going to work out for him at Manchester United. I probably, in all fairness, I had doubts that he would even go on to be a footballer, to be perfectly honest with you.
Okay.
I could just sort of, the way I feel, I've always got a fairly good gauge of looking at people and players and thinking, yeah, you've got a bit, I just couldn't see it at that moment in time. Fast forward anyway, fast forward a few years on, Ron Robert Zieler has played 6 times for Germany.
Yeah.
He was second choice goalie at the 2014 World Cup where Germany went and won it behind Manuel Neuer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
Brilliant
but that
career.
Is the beauty of like, don't ever give up. Don't let anybody say anything to you about what you go and do it for you, mate.
100%. And that is football in a nutshell. You know, that's your view of it, your perception, your opinion, but what does that matter? You know, the journey is your own journey and which way you're going. So it's up to you where you take it. And I think, you know, in that circumstance, he, absolutely brilliant career, great lad. Well, you know, fantastic for him. But yeah, that is football for me in a nutshell. You know, how can anyone make a judgment? It's very difficult to make a judgment.
Yeah, it's mad,
so,
isn't it?
Maybe with goalkeepers, is that fair to say? Because we had our local team, we had Ben Wilson from Coventry on a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he barely kicked a ball before he was what? 20,
late 20s, nearly 30,
knocking on 30. Yeah. And now he's playing, he's doing really, really well. But I think, like you said, Ben, you probably started to get to your best when you were around 30.
I'd say I'd be
you?
About the same as Tom. I was a bit of a late bloomer, didn't really play much first team football until I was well into my 20s. But I think that's the position of goalkeeping. I don't think it is such a mental game. And if you're a young man and you've got emotions running all over the place, they run out of control sometimes.
Is it fair to say, as well as a goalkeeper, that so much of it, and a big, big skill is communicating? And is that something that will come as you get maybe a little bit older? Because obviously the best goalkeepers and you guys at the absolute top level, they all communicate so, so well. And as a youngster, that might not come too naturally.
Fair. I think it's a skill. I think a lot of it comes in security in yourself, that as well.
Yeah.
If you're willing to dish out assertive information to anyone on the team, then you've got to be comfortable in what you're about. So I think that's probably a little bit of maturity and age issue. And it's also a skill, you know, delivering it at the right level. You can hear it in the stadium. It's not easy, but there is a way to do it. It's given at the right time, the sort of short and concise information. So, big skill can have a big impact.
but you've got to be comfortable giving it.
It's about gauging that person as well. Yeah. So if you're talking to your left back and he's a certain character, a certain type of person, you know you can't go berating him and shouting.
Yeah, that's exactly so true. It's true, isn't it?
You've got to have a bit of mouse about you, a bit of people skills. Is that what it's called?
Keep it skills. And it's a relationship. It's knowing the people that you're doing. That through that team, having that sort of spirit where you understand each individual and you understand how to give them the information.
You can hammer someone and you know that they take that stick approach rather than the carrot, maybe.
But it's even in the game, like if somebody's already made a mistake early doors and it's led to a goal, you ain't going to, even they could be the most strongest man in the world, I don't care. From that moment on, you have to go, well done, mate, that's incredible. You have to blow so much smoke up people's asses. It's a joke, isn't it? Really interesting.
I think when you kind of decided to put the GoPro, I'm sure you've seen it, when you put the GoPro in the back of your goal, the kind of everyday fan and amateur footballers, it was almost like a revelation when you stuck that GoPro in, because people could hear
what you were saying. Yeah, for sure.
The amount of comments we used to get on videos saying, I've shown this to my 13-year-old son, and just explaining how important it is. Just how important.
It was revelatory. I wasn't a big fan. I'm a purist. Oh, yeah.
This wouldn't even cross your mind to do that. Don't get me wrong. It's fully taking the piss is what it is.
But I get it. You know, I can understand from having, you know, for that must open people's eyes, the understanding of seeing it. But yeah, it always threw me a bit, that one, Foz, I've got to be honest. But the purist in me struggled with it. And I was like, oh no.
He's walking out with a GoPro. He's walking out with a GoPro. And he's talking to it in the game. Is he taking the piss?
You weren't talking to it.
No, I weren't.
But I think that's like you were saying, like sitting and having a couple of minutes before.
Yeah,
you were very much. Because you used to get a bit of shade over it, obviously. And people were going, he needs to concentrate on his football. But you were always very, very defiant in saying, no, once that whistle goes, it's not there.
Yeah,
I just learned to, I just think, like say you said earlier about that nervous energy, I think there's too many, I think everybody's got too much nervous energy before the game, and I think it just takes it out of you. Why would you want to spend that energy at that moment in time? Wait till the game kicks off. You know what you're doing as a footballer. You know what I mean? You know, as a goalkeeper, genuinely, like you could play a football match right now. If I said to you, you've got 90 seconds to get into your football kit and play a football match, you'd know what you're doing, but your mind will absolutely fuck you, honestly. It'll go, but you haven't warmed up, you didn't do anything yesterday properly, which gets you ready for the game, you didn't do your normal Friday, you didn't do your normal warm-up, so you're going to be a failure today, you're going to look a dickhead in front of everybody. That's what your brain does. Mad, isn't it?
It is. It's the human nature side.
I want to talk about something. Somebody sent me a picture of you yesterday. No, someone that you know. and I want to talk to... We're going to have a little bit of England chat. And this man sent me a picture and said, show this to Tom. And I can't believe they're buying it on him, Mr. Dave Watson.
Watto. Bloody hell, yeah.
Good old Watto.
Watto. Class. I think I know what he's going to say here.
No, there is a story.
Yeah, I mean that was the 2016 Euros. I think that was the goalkeeping group, Hearty, Big Phrase, me and Watto, and they used to sing to me the Pina Colada.
Yeah,
Pina Colada.
That one, yeah, because like I'd go out there, and I don't like going out full throttle straight away. I like building into it, you know what I mean? So they'd be going through the cones at 100 mile an hour, and I'm going, nah. And then every time I'm going through, I go, Pina Colada. You know, I'm just easing my way into the session.
Hearty would just go out and boot balls straight away.
You know, and I'm like, nah, I'm easing myself in, nice and steady. You know, the bit that matters is, you know, down the line. It's not the first little bit of warm-up for the goalie. So like, I get a bit of grief from it here, because I like to sort of build into the day, you know, mate. What I mean, nice and like you be with me here. I know you'd be with
100%,
me
with
this.
100%, mate.
Is Joe one speed 100 mile an hour?
He's Tigger. You know Tigger from Winnie the Pooh. he's Tigger from Winnie the Pooh.
Set him off when he's.
Oh, he's good to. He's good to go from the second he gets out there to the last one coming in off the training pitch. He still wants to dive around and chuck himself about and save everything. Talking about England, then talk to me about your England career. Three appearances, right?
Every age group, though, Ben.
Yeah, every age group, all the way through 16, 17s,
18s, 19s, 21s.
Yeah.
Men's team
into the senior team. Debut against Australia.
Yeah.
Proudest moment of your football career?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, 16, 17s, 18s, 19s, 21s, brilliant, real good youth grounding through football here. But it's sort of a little bit of probably followed the path of my career in some respects, whereas a lot of potential coming through, and it found it difficult to then go and establish. You know, I was getting offered contracts here, so I had to sort of stay without playing a lot of games. So a little bit of a late develop, I think. Was I 29 on my England debut? Yeah. So big gap between under 21s and England debut. But another marker for everyone has their own journey. Mm. I think, you know, that was certainly me. Never lost belief in where I was going or what I was trying to head to. Yeah, Australia, Stadium of Light it was. We were travelling around, I think, playing different games.
I loved it at that time, to be fair. The fans were right up for it, didn't they?
So, yeah, the plan was to get me an appearance, get out there before we went to the Euros in case it was needed. You've been blooded in. So 25 minutes to go, I'm out jogging down the, you know, stretching and that. I'm looking at Roy, but Australia scored while I'm warming up. So like, he's thinking about the game. It's got a 2-1. Forgotten about me warming up. So I think Hartley had to remind him with about 10 minutes to go.
Roy! Yeah,
don't forget he's down there. So like, he was on the bench because Big Fraser was playing. So I think, to be fair to him, he told him 87 minutes
decent.
On there. You know, 6 minutes, 2 touches, but oh my, it felt good. Like, you know what I mean? I remember sort of running on, clapping the England fans. And I did it, held my hands above my head because I was trying to hide the massive grin I had on my dish at the time. Really? You know, like, I was absolutely buzzing. Yeah.
About your first? We always like to ask people about that first time when you knew you were getting called up.
Yeah.
How did it happen? Where were you?
I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember. Yeah, no. I can remember the first time I was starting for England. Yep. That was a good one. We were away in France, you know, like day before the game, obviously France, big team, you know, playing at the Stade de France, you know, it was an amazing moment. I remember getting back to the hotel room, been at training, finished training, good session, getting ready for the game, got back and it was like, dancing around the hotel room on me. You know those moments where you just think like, let's have it.
First person you called?
Probably my dad, been there throughout the journey, followed by my wife. Just a brilliant moment, you know, like a personal moment as well. Like, I was on my own, you know, dancing around the room, getting there. Because it's what I've been striving for, you
absolutely.
Know. That's what I'd set out to do, go and play, be England number one, play for England, start for England. So, yeah, brilliant moment. That sort of sticks out there. And it's feeling. It's a bit like what I said at the start of the show. For me, it's the feeling that you get.
Yeah.
That is very, very difficult to replace anywhere else.
Well, it's not only that. It's like, you work. This is what it was all for. Do you know what I mean? Like, you started, what, how old were you when you first started? You was at Wrexham as a kid, weren't you? From what, 10, 11?
9, I think. Yeah,
9, 10, 11. Yeah. And it's taken, what, best part of, what,
20 years.
Another 20 years to get to that moment where it's like the pinnacle, pretty much, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's how it felt. So it was a bit of like, yes, you've got a game to play. Yes, you're playing for England, all the pressures, but that's what you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's exactly where I wanted to be. It's what I've been driving towards. So, yeah, brilliant, brilliant moment that.
Not to turn it on its head or anything, from a nice positive story to something that I actually quite laughed about when I was looking at the research, because this is just brilliant, right? Spain, okay? Yeah. It's 1-0 at halftime. You come on, right? Yeah. 1-0 up at halftime. You come on. 2-0. Boom. Boys, we are cooking here. Yeah. Jamie Vardy, well done, geez. You get into the last minutes of the game. Yeah. Talk me through it.
I remember one went through my legs. I mean, he was quite close in, to be fair. So, like, I, you know what? I didn't walk away from the game thinking,
that's your fault, that is.
Nah, I mean, look, it wasn't ideal. We should have seen the game out. There was probably out of the two goals, I think one of them you might have looked and gone,
nothing major.
You pretty much get that in every game. Yeah, you know, you can always look at a goalkeeper and go, could you do a bit something different there? Honestly, I did not walk out of there going, I've cost us there.
Yeah.
I didn't. You know, I properly enjoyed the 45 minutes. Yes, we came away with 2-2 when we should have beat Spain. And Spain at the time, I think, were, you know, real, real top side. So it was frustrating, but there was an awful lot of positives coming out of the game. I really enjoyed the 45 minutes. Of course, it's a bummer when you concede too late. Part and parcel of goalkeeper, a bit like what I said earlier, you know, like it can happen.
Yeah.
You know, like it's that acceptance mentality of dealing with it.
Have you ever been much of a sort of shirt collector?
Nope. Only my own.
Really?
Yeah, only like big markers for me, really. Yeah, I've never really been.
So you got your England debut, you got your England shirts,
England
and stuff
one,
like that.
England debut, first England start, first Burnley Premier League one, first Man United start.
Yeah.
The Burnley performance at Old Trafford, obviously being at United and going
remember
there, going
that
to Old
bad
Trafford,
boy.
Go back there. That was a big one, you know, like digging in the trenches and getting
was that the one Zlatan where you come out and you spread out? Yeah. Oh, that was a thing of beauty, mate.
For me as well, I think that after that game, I think Big Pete, who I see quite often now, but he I think he tweeted saying it's one of the best saves he'd seen.
It's beautiful, you know,
for me,
Big Peter Schmeichel.
So like for me, that was growing up as being one of your heroes coming out of that. It was a good day all round, that, to be fair.
Do you know what's an interesting question? Do you put many of your memorabilia or shirts up or anything like that at home, or do you keep them in like a box and stuff like that?
Yeah, like majority's in a box out the way. Admittedly, I've got 5 or 6 of the best moments up in a sort of room. out of the way.
But not on display or anything like that.
Yeah, they are out, but like it's a room that, you know, you sort of go in, like a storage room that you sort of no one ever goes
in. I only ask it because we actually did a podcast the other day of all, like, we went through a load of my memorabilia, of shirts, like any trophies, all that kind of bits and bobs. And a lot of people are like, why wouldn't you put that on a shelf? Why wouldn't you put it on display? And I'm like, I've just never wanted to do that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like the house is a separate.
Is it a separation thing of that probably, come home and that's football?
It's like
this
you don't
is
really
home.
Want to gloat about it, really. No, it's cool. And
do you know what I mean? It's all inside, innit? I think that's probably enough. I think that's probably how I feel about
it. Yeah. All right, mate. I just want to talk about a few of the goalkeepers that you've had the pleasure, hopefully the pleasure, of playing with throughout your career. So I'm going to throw some names at you, some of the people that people will know at home. Let's start with Pepe Reina.
Pepe Reina
was in goal for the Spain game, by the way.
Oh, of course. He was. Good shout. Yeah. I think, obviously, you know, I got injured at Villa, you know, cruciate, similar to you've been through, you know, horrendous. So I had the operation, I'm on crutches. Club want to sign a goalie, bring in Pepe Reina. Again, always enjoyed watching him growing up as how he played. I think the club caught on camera, actually, Villa caught it on camera when I'm on crutches on him. We ended up having a real awkward sort of hug. But it was a nice moment, you know what I mean? That, like, he'd arrived. Me and him got on great for the 6 months he was there. Really liked him. Top goalie, you know, throughout his career. As I say, just brilliant to spend some time with him, actually.
I mean, he's 41 now. And he's still doing it at Villarreal, isn't he?
Saved the penalty the other night.
Yeah. Did he?
Saved the penalty the other night in the Europa or Champions League, whatever they're in,
Is that what something you want to do? Just play until you can't?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, at the minute, I have to say, I feel really, really good. Feel bang at it. Still got the flame burning as strong as ever.
Great.
You know, and hungry to play. You know, I think the desire is still there, the drive's still there. Saturday when you don't play is difficult still, you know. I think it, and that for me is the marker of where I'm at. So yeah, for as long as I feel bang at it, I'll be knocking on the door.
You look $1 million, dollars, mate. Genuinely, you can see it, can't you? Look at the buzz on his
face.
Absolutely. Quickly, I'm gonna name another goalie in a second. I remember we played against United. It was the first season that you signed. Actually, it would have been 2 or 3 years ago at Watford. I remember speaking to you after the game, and I was like, "How's it going?" You were like, "Yeah, it's all right. I wish I was playing today, though." I found out, mate. I know. Right, give me a bit of David De Gea talk. How much of a legend is this guy? Because you got on really well with him, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. You know, I hit it off with David. Obviously, I'd gotten well with him playing against him over the years. So when I had the opportunity to sign back here, obviously, having spent a lot of time here as a club, you know, came back, real good moment. But I really enjoyed working with him. Legend of this football club, I think, in my opinion. Brilliant shot stopper. You know, so calm in his movement around the goal, which always in the right position, always gave him the best chance to make the save. So there's never any rushing, never found him lost composure moving around the goal. And you know what it's like, you go back to the basics of be set, be in the right position.
Yeah.
That gives you a great chance of making a save, no matter where the ball goes. Yeah, and he was a master at that. And you can see over his, you know, his montage of saves that he's made over the time he's been in the Premier League. You know, he's absolutely unbelievable, and I think it's down to his movement around the goal, getting set, and his ability to be in the right position with calmness. Top.
That's it. That's exactly what it is. I put a tweet out ages ago saying people make out like De Gea makes just basic saves, and I was like, no. The reason why he makes these saves is because he's always in the right position. The skill of goalkeeping, is to be in the most optimal position, because you're never going to be in the right position. You can never be in 100% the right. You have to be in the most optimal position to be able to make the save, and that's all you can do anything.
I don't think the goalkeeper is a different position, clearly, but it's one where people watching at home, like, everyone can have a look at a striker and go, he should have scored that or something like that. It's different for goalkeepers. People watching at home can have a view, of course, but very rarely do they understand the thinking behind the movement or the starting position.
I think that's definitely fair. I think it's one of those things that, as coaching and sort of the games develop, there's now so much analysis, on opposition, strikers, you get information. But I'm always a believer in, if you get to the right position, you can deal with anything. And you never know. Like, even if a centre-forward's put it in the top left-hand corner 6 times this season, no reason he might not go the bottom right corner, or the bottom left, whatever. You know, so you've got to be in a position to react to everything. And I think that's the basis of it for me.
I played in David's very first game for Man United. So... I was at West Brom, first game of the season, and it was Shane Long. They scored early doors, but then Shane Long equalised, and it just sort of dribbled under his hand a bit.
Right,
very first game, and it was Skinny De Gea. Yeah. Do you remember Skinny? Do you remember Skinny De Gea when he first signed? And I remember watching it and thinking, "Oh, mate, they just signed you for a lot of money from Atletico Madrid. You better grow up quickly, you know, because this will eat you up. This will." Yeah. Oh my God, fair play to him. I would put him in the top 10 probably of Premier League goalkeepers history.
Yeah.
He has to be in there, doesn't he?
I would agree.
Has to be able to have done what he did for Man United for all of them years. And I won't lie to you, I'm half buzzing that he's gone as well, because he was one of the goalies who would have been able to catch my all-time save record.
That is he's so still selfish.
There. So selfish.
Yeah, well, who else was there?
Lucas Fabianski.
I bet you'll please this year.
He's on the bench, unlucky.
Yeah.
And David De Gea is unfortunately out of the question. So no Premier League team should sign him, to be perfectly honest. All right,
and it's a bit like the sustained success we like mentioned earlier. You know, to do that at this football club, you know, that is impressive. Totally agree with what you say.
Love
fantastic.
That.
I think we've got some.
I want to talk about Nick Pope quickly. Nick Pope. How happy have you been for Nick Pope, watching him flourish into this absolute beast that is on our TV screens, not only in the Premier League but in the Champions League now as well?
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. Great lad. Me and him, you know, get on great. Always did. Always worked really well together. So pleased. And obviously, it was a difficult moment for me when I first came off, when he first got his opportunity, but he grabbed it with both hands and was absolutely outstanding. As I say, delighted for him. He is difficult to get the ball past.
Yeah.
He is very, very difficult to
get
the ball
past. He's a very big man, isn't he?
Very big man. He is, you know, like, it was really evident in training that, like, you know, he is not easy to beat.
I love you know, that. I love how you've just broken goalkeeping down.
Simplified
into,
it.
Yeah, he's difficult to score a goal past.
He epitomises it, to be honest. You know, like, if Popey stands there, you know, whether you're close in, whether you're far away, not
do you know what the funny thing is on Wikipedia it says he's 6'3" or 6'4".
So in the past
it's been talked about like on our channels and stuff about Nick Pope being 6'7" and people go, no, he's not. He's 6'4". It says so on Wikipedia. He's not 6'4".
No. He's massive.
He's 6'6". Popey is 6'6", and his arms and legs are like extra long.
go gadget arms.
Yeah, big. Big.
Right, come on then. What do you got? Some quick fires?
Yeah, we've got some quick fires to finish up, if that's okay. Idol growing up, beat Schmeichel.
Yeah, mixed between Schmeichel and Van der Sar. It merged, transferred, I should say. But yeah, those two stand out.
Yep. I love that. What is your bucket list sporting event as a fan? One thing you want to go to, the final of something, whatever it is.
Fancy the Masters at Augusta.
Right. So this used to be the right answer. It used to be the right answer, yeah.
Right.
And then we had, I think it was actually Ben Wilson, and he said final day of the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, I did the Ryder Cup at...
did you?
I did it in 2010 at Celtic Manor.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the washout year though, wasn't it?
Yeah, and like, you know, you're four people back. You can't see where the ball is
really
going.
Yeah.
Get to like the because there's something about Augusta, you know, like with
it's the... Do you know, I think it's because it's played there every year, isn't it? Because obviously...
There's not a leaf out of place, is there?
No, it's not.
There's
prime,
not a
it?
Leaf
yeah.
out of place.
It's premium, like, it's
about,
proper.
First big paycheck, did you have a little indulgence, a splash out on something for yourself?
Good question. Still waiting on a big paycheck.
I know, yeah. That sounds nice. What are you on about?
No, honestly, not from memory. I'm pretty sort of straight with my money, if I'm honest.
Okay.
Not that sort of
flash.
Extravagant.
You're not flash, are you, Tom?
Damn must right. be a GK thing, I reckon.
Yeah, Goldies aren't flash, though. Where are they? No chance. Any phobias? Anything you're absolutely shit scared of?
You know what? I'm not a lover of flying.
Yeah,
and the amount of flying we have to do,
silly.
So like, you can imagine what the grief I'm getting on the planes from the lads. Like, you know, it's murder. It is murder.
You so do like, get a lot of lads that are absolutely petrified of flying.
Nah,
you know,
yeah. And like honestly, the worst for me is Shorey. Shorey comes to sit next to me. Luke Shaw comes to sit next to me every single flight because he's not great, but I'm worse. So it makes him feel better to see me. Like
I love it.
Next to him, yeah. So I'm not. Don't get me wrong. I do it. I can like I just about deal with it, but I don't love it. I have to say.
Funniest player in the Man United team?
Obviously recently signed. I've known him for a long time, but Johnny Evans for me, I think we're on the same level of banter, to be fair. So for me, he'd be the standout.
Scott McTominay's usually on the end of it as well.
Which He's getting battered, yeah.
Having clean off.
I'm buzzing to see Johnny back, by the way. How good Johnny Evans, by the way. People don't understand this, do they?
Exactly.
They don't understand how good of a player Johnny Evans is, isn't he?
Bang true, that is. Oh. I think, to be fair, having now come back in and seen how well he's played in the games he's played in, I think that people are starting to actually realise again that...
Yeah.
Top end.
Oh, proper player, that. Imagine that. Imagine Johnny Evans, who's played 300, 400 odd games in the Premier League, a proper player. If you had to pick one quiz mate from the Man United team, who are you picking?
Oh, that's a good one. Is it a football quiz?
General knowledge.
Oh, okay.
Both. Sports round and general knowledge.
Football quiz, I would go Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah?
Football fanatic, yeah. Loves it.
Wow.
Knowledge is very good on football and all across the world football.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Oh, so he'd be the sports one. Trivia one's going to be a challenge.
Everyone says that.
Would it be easier then to say, who would you not want on your quiz team?
No, I can't chuck a few under the bus here. There's a few that I'd like to chuck. I'm going to go with my partner that I'd actually want, and I'll tell you who it's going to be. Victor Lindelof.
Yeah?
Yeah, Victor Lindelof.
Smart guy.
Smart guy. He's good on the old, you know, the words game, like, you know, where you got to pick the words, sort of Scrabble-esque.
Yeah,
game.
Okay.
Me and him, like, if he's ever struggling, he'll come with me. If I'm ever struggling, I'll go with him. So Victor would be my partner.
Have you got Countdown?
Yes. No. Yes, we have got, sorry, the Countdown game where you play two-player. Good game.
It's unbelievable. Very good, yeah. I'd actually batter you at that.
We did it live on a podcast the other day with Tom Cleverly, didn't we?
Yeah, we did it. We did a practice conundrum.
Yeah, very good. You win.
I beat him straight away, got it straight away. Do you know what was weird, right? How mad is this, yeah? The word, can you remember the word, anybody?
No.
I can't remember it, but there was two actual answers, yeah? There was two answers for the one conundrum. Right. So
that
he said to me...
That wasn't part of the game.
No. He said his answer and I went, nope, it could have been. And I said, no, it's this. And I typed it in and it was right. But then we looked back and it was like, you could have used Tom's as well. It was an actual answer, yeah? Which is bonkers, right? So I don't know if I'd have put Tom's in. So what we said is, let's do it again, basically.
Yeah.
Did it again. I got it within about 3 seconds. Bosh, reigning champion. Reigning champion. Finally then, Tom, what is next for you? What do you see yourself doing? How long do you want to play for? And then afterwards, what do you want to do as well?
For me, literally all the focus is on playing right now. You know, I feel great, really enjoying it. As I say, I've still got the mad hunger, mad sort of flame burning. So for me, that's the only thing in my sights. In the future, I don't know, I'll sort of address that when it comes around. For me at the minute is the playing and performing.
He'll be a coach, by the way. He will definitely be a coach. It's simple. It's as simple as that, okay? Tom, thank you for coming on, mate. Really
Cheers,
appreciate
lads.
It. Thanks Man United,
much.
Thank you for having us here at Carrington. Up the Foscast.
Up the Foscast.
Cheers, mate. You were supposed to say it as well.
Oh, it's all right. Up the Foscast.
Cheers, lad. Top man.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Foscast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Foscast.